When Mallory Franklin won her silver medal at the Tokyo Olympics in the summer, she was arguably more in the spotlight than at any time before in her life. But the canoe slalom paddler has every right to be recognised. In 2018, she became Britain's most successful female canoeist, and she is a former C1 European and World Cup champion. She followed up that Tokyo silver medal with a K1 World Cup silver medal at the start of September. Behind the scenes, however, she is a real perfectionist, and that can sometimes be a real detriment to how much pressure you put on yourself and the anxiety that goes with it. When lockdown 1 hit at the start of the pandemic, that enforced break led Mallory into unpicking the reasons behind that anxiety and getting her mind into a better place. Much of this episode is focused on the mental side, as Mallory takes us through her journey to appreciating and being in the moment, as well as learning to separate self-worth from your performance. She also tells us about the equality journey that Women's C1 has come on, as well as the importance of sport as a whole. Mallory, a very warm welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. I think it's fair to say that it's a pretty busy period at the moment, considering the last couple of months, but also what is to come in the near future as well. But ultimately, how are things first off with you, considering everything that's going on?
Thanks, Tommy. It's good. Very busy and a lot going on, but able to get some training in and get to do some experiences off the back of the games and get some wedding planning done, but all in all, just trying to like get through a little bit to the end of the world, and then I'll have a bit of time off after that.
Well, yeah, when you throw in wedding planning into all of that as well, that is a lot, having just come off the back of my sister's wedding a couple of weeks ago. It's a lot of planning that goes into it. We've got plenty to talk about on this particular episode. There's so many different topics we can touch on, not least the silver at the recent World Cup as well, at the start of this month. But should we start with Tokyo? Because I think many of us, including myself, are still having Tokyo withdrawal symptoms and not having it in our lives anymore on a daily basis. And I think you said at the time that silver might take 5 months to sink in, knowing you. So has it sunk in, or do we need to wait another like 2 or 3 months?
It's kind of weird, I think, because I went back into racing normally and more like just training again, it kind of feels a bit funny. I think I did some like really cool, got invited to like go watch the 100 and go and watch like Cinderella and those kind of things, and they kind of help a little bit, but I think actually in terms of what that result was and what it means, I don't think it's sunk in yet. But I don't know if it ever will, to be honest. I think it's kind of one of those things that every time you stop and realize what it was and what it means, then it kind of hits you again.
Is that sort of reflective of you as a person at the same time, whether you kind of take stock of those things, or whether, you know, it's kind of the next thing and you're always looking at the next thing? That makes sense.
Yeah, I think it is a bit. I think that because I didn't build the Olympics up massively in my head, it wasn't, obviously I really wanted to go there and do well, like, but at the same time, it was like I was there to try and have fun and enjoy my racing. And therefore, I think even getting a medal out of it, I'm a little bit like, cool, I kind of did what I wanted. Like, that's really cool. But then it's like, well, what can I do next? And like for me, having my kayak alongside and having to drop that, like I prioritized C1 for nearly 2 years, which is really weird for me and how I paddle. And so to be able to bring that back in, I think it was like, well, now my next goal is that. And I want to level these out again. And I want to be trying to push for medals in both boats at the world. So I think I always have that next thing to focus on. So I think it kind of does bring about that mindset of I really liked and appreciated what happened at the games and that whole experience. I think it's something that'll always live with me, but I think I tend to look forwards a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Does that sum up sort of the overall reflection of that period, in that, you know, it was fun and it was great and a brilliant experience, but not the be all and end all?
Yeah, I think that it's such an odd thing, the games, especially in our sport, because you only have one boat from each nation rather than like at our world championships, you have three. So actually the standard of the games is generally actually a bit lower. Like to do well is easier in the sense of who you're competing against, but it's harder in the sense of the environment that is the games and the media attention and that side. And I think therefore I was kind of aware going into it that I could be in really good shape. I could feel really positive, but one little thing might happen. It might mean that I don't achieve. And that's not necessarily my fault. Like it's not really a judgment on me. It's just what might happen in those moments. And therefore I think like there's an element of you have to just be kind of, you can't build it up to be this massive, like this humongous thing that means everything. Cause otherwise like you lose that stability afterwards. And for me, it was really, really important to just try and be able to take it in my stride and not build it up too much. But it's probably a bit easier when you come away having done well to be able to deal with that kind of situation. But it's a bit like that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And then, like I say, we touched on it, the K1 silver at the start of September in the World Cup in Spain. Was that essentially that reset and then going again? And you touched on the kayaking and kind of, you know, switching that focus back a little bit and whether it's kind of the start of another chapter.
Yeah, I think it was a bit. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't expecting at all to go to that race and even final, let alone be able to make the podium. And it was really cool to see my kayak still be there, having not focused on it so much for so long. Like I was still doing kayak. I was trying to get like one, maybe two sessions in a week, but I was just going paddling when I got in kayak. I didn't have any massive technical goal. So for it to still be able to, for me to still be able to perform at that level, which I think is partially because once you're able to form at that level and leave the boat, you'll have that ability somewhat across. But it was really nice for me to see that. And it was definitely part of this kind of, as much as I am a C1 athlete and I went to the games and I got my result at the games in C1, it's like I also wanted people to know that I'm like a kayak athlete and I haven't given it up and it's still there and it's still something that I have a strong desire to do well in.
Is it going to be a case of juggling the two in the near future, or is it, you know, take it as it comes sort of thing?
Yeah, I'd probably pretty much just try and stay 50-50. But I think if at any point there's kind of like a forced bias, I'd probably pick kayak just because I've had so much time in C1 recently. And I think I've taken so many strides in that over like the 2 years preparing for the games. And I think I'd like to kind of give kayak that opportunity to kind of understand it a bit more and spend those little intricate sessions a bit more in it. But I don't think that I've got any massive need to like massively sway the weighting the other way. So I think it would just be a case of if I did like 7 white water sessions in a week, I might do 4 in kayak and 3 in C1, but I wouldn't do anything more crazy than that.
No, that makes total sense. So long-time listeners of this show will obviously know how much we kind of champion women's sports, disability sport, and just kind of pushing the sport for all message really. And the potential it can have if you give it the attention it deserves and properly invest in it. And after winning that Tokyo silver in particular, I think it was, you know, widely highlighted the impact that you had on getting the C1 female class into that first games as well. Can you sum up that journey to get it to that point? That's a really big question, but I suppose where it was to where it is now and where it can go in the future.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that I don't think I've necessarily been that present in the process of. I've obviously been physically present, but in terms of noticing like the steps that necessarily happened, I wasn't necessarily as obviously engaged in them. I think I was just there being like, well, these opportunities, like it makes sense. Like, why wouldn't we be in the World Championships? Why wouldn't we be able to do the same things as everyone else? And therefore it was just something that seemed right, and it going into the games as part of that process. But I mean, I personally, like, I paddled C1 before there was a women's class when I was younger. I had to stop doing it because I had an injury in my knee that prevented me from doing C1. But it was always kind of, in my view, it was like, well, it's just a different boat. There's no reason why women can't do it. And so I probably did it a bit when I was younger. And then it kind of started to get introduced anyway, and I probably picked it up straight away again. And I think that inevitably it started off as a little bit of a joke class, people might say. Like, you had pretty young girls in general trying to do something that required quite a lot of strength and quite a lot of technical ability, and there were girls that were definitely capable of it at that age. Like, it just, that is just how it was. But at the same time, there wasn't the depth, but you wouldn't expect there to be a depth in a brand new class. Like if you go back like 30, 40 years, whatever it is, to the start of the kite disciplines and the men's C1, like there would be the same level of like the just the drop off to make finals is quite high. The, like you can get medals with like bad runs. That's just what would happen. Like it's, it seemed ridiculous to ever expect that to be different. But I think kind of over the years, you've seen that that standard progress massively. And definitely like our final at the games was probably the most competitive final there was. So there was definitely good runs in other class, but in terms of being able to make the podium, you had to be doing a very high quality run. And that was cool to see. And I was really proud to be a part of that group and be a part of that like message that was just like, there were people that thought we didn't belong there and the standard wasn't good enough. And actually to come out of it being realistically the most competitive class and doing runs that were like Jess, who won gold, like her run would have been up there with the C1 men. And that's amazing to see. And it's so good for us in our sport and like us as a discipline to just be like, no, we are here and this is a thing. And I think it shows what the determination of all those girls over that time and just all of the girls that put themselves in the positions to go and try things.
Yeah, absolutely. And having watched that final, I mean, it was pretty clear how competitive it was. And that it almost touches on something that I keep me and others bang on about in relation to a lot of women's sports, in that you take, say, football, for example, and it being banned for 50 years. And the negative reactions to it are always saying it's not up to the standard that, you know, you're used to seeing on TV, but it needs that time. It needs that time to catch up. And I imagine that's very much a similar story about, you know, as much as people want to push the level and the competitiveness, also trying to have that patience alongside it at the same time. That kind of sums up a similar type of journey that C1's on.
Yeah, I think definitely it's kind of, I had a really weird recollection of a similar thing. Like we do like sprint, like we do like this, we call it speed endurance, but it's basically like short sprints as like part of our training to try and like gain speed and endure it. But like I was thinking about it, the kind of times that girls are pushing, and it's like for us, we're trying to push like into a 6 second 20 meter sprint or whatever, and the guys are kind of pushing towards five. But actually I remember like a few years ago the guys were trying to push towards the six, and in the class in general, even if you just took the big like football, if you actually went back a few years in the standard they were playing at, the women now are probably not far off that standard. They're actually ahead of the curve of that. It's just you need to give it time to level off a little bit and let them catch up with the like little nuances of the sport and those kind of things.
Exactly. I mean, you look at the sort of the trajectory in that time compared to say what men's sport has done in a greater period of time, and the acceleration I think is clear for all. Do you feel like a pioneer? That word's been used a lot.
I kind of want to say no. I'd like to kind of consider myself quite a champion for the sport and someone that will always push for kids to get involved and enjoy sport. I'd like them to do slalom, but it's not something I necessarily push. Sports taught me so much, and being a part of sport has allowed me to grow massively as a person, and I think that's definitely something that I heavily encourage. But in terms of actually being a pioneer, it's a bit of a funny thing for me. I almost like to consider myself one, but I don't think you can call yourself one, if that makes sense. It's what I'd like to strive to be, but I don't think I can necessarily say I am. At the same time, seeing some of the reactions of some of the people that some of the young athletes that I know and how they react, then I can see that kind of mindset.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. You kind of want to leave that to others to decide rather than yourself. But I mean, considering what you have done in your career, we talk about medals and 2018 becoming GB's most successful female canoeist, that must make you proud at the same time, even if you don't want to call yourself a pioneer.
Yeah, obviously. I think it's such a funny thing. Like, I had absolutely no idea of that. It wasn't something I've been paying attention to. And then end of 2018, everyone started saying it, and I was like, I didn't actually realize that. It's really cool. But I think it's kind of one of those things I'm a bit like, right, yeah, I'm still going to carry on trying to get more medals. Like, it's definitely nothing to like settle in, but it's cool to be up there, and it's cool to kind of have that history and have had the experiences that I've had in my sport.
Absolutely. And moving on, and kind of this touches on the athlete mindset type of things, because it's always something that I think amazes me and plenty of others when we watch people like yourself just doing what you do. And again, kind of doing some background reading and seeing how you had, I suppose, struggled to stay in the moment before in the past, and maybe kind of learning how to deal with being okay with the unpredictability of sport and whatever might happen on any given competition day. How has that journey gone for you and kind of working on that? Because I think, or did I also read that the sort of lockdown pandemic period, there was a lot of emphasis on trying to work on that and kind of develop that side of things?
Yeah, so it kind of came about a little bit with lockdown happening and all of our races getting cancelled and not being able to travel on that side, and actually realising that was kind of a relief for me, the idea of not having to go to a race and not having to go through like the emotional stress of that period, and actually realising how stressful I found racing. As much as I enjoy it and it's something that I don't think I'd ever not put myself in who I am, but actually the amount of energy and time that goes into me trying to balance my headspace over that time is quite high. And it's, yeah, generally born around, I'm quite a perfectionist by nature, and I probably have quite a bit of anxiety around that, probably more social anxiety in terms of who I am and how I represent myself around people that I know. But at the same time, within my sport, it kind of comes about as more kind of wanting to know the result before I've done the race, which is kind of a bit stupid. And it's a lot of like, well, I kind of think this will happen. Like, I kind of, you know, when you go into things, it's just like based on like history or like expectation, you kind of know that maybe I'm capable of meddling at this race, maybe I'm not, but like kind of spending a lot of time in that place of what's going to happen, what do I think might happen, what are the risks, rewards, all of that side, and not spending that much time just being like, well, actually all I can do right now is build this profile of who I am and how I want to go about competing in my sport, and just letting that out into the world and seeing what happens. And I think over lockdown, I spent a lot of time trying to understand and unpick kind of where that anxiety comes from and why I can't trust the present and why I need the stability of the outcome. And I think a lot of that, it wasn't easy. It wasn't an easy process, but I think that it taught me a lot about kind of that element of you only, your ability is only what you do on the day. It's easy, especially in our sport, to be like, oh, I like caught a funny bit of water and then I hit that gate, or I like missed that gate. And it's easy to be like, oh, if I hadn't have done that, this would have happened. And I'm a little bit like, well, that's not true, because it happened for a reason. And it was just a case of that's the level you performed that day. You couldn't do any more, because otherwise you would have done more. You may have future potential to, in a similar situation, make a better decision, but at that particular moment, that was what you did. And it was a lot of kind of accepting that, and therefore trying to put effort into making the best decisions and putting myself in a position where I was able to be free and have headspace to be able to see things clearer in the moment. And it was a lot just trying to shift away from that kind of needing to know the answers and wanting to prove that I'm good enough, rather than just wanting to enjoy what I spend my days doing.
It's almost relatable. I put that with the caveat of like, I'm nowhere near elite level sport, but sort of when I fenced back in the day, and I was in a competition, I'm like, oh, I don't want to get drawn against him because I lost to him last time, even though I, you know, I might not get drawn against him, who knows, but yeah. I do want to get drawn against him because I beat him last time, and so on, which is those mental games, even though, you know, that might not ever happen, considering yeah. how the run of the competition goes. It sounds simple when you say it, doesn't it? But putting it into practice, I imagine, has been a very different story.
Yeah, I think mostly for me around not using, I'm quite analytical, and I do a lot of focusing on kind of, like, if so at the World Championships Olympic selection, I messed up a lot of things, but I messed up a move in my C1 final, semi-final, and it was a move that I spent a lot of time obsessing about in training, and therefore when I got to racing, it was I was so nervous about it. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. In my mind, I was like, well, 30% of the time I did it well, 30% of the time I did it terribly. And then kind of this middle ground was like average. And I'd end up focusing a lot more on the negative side than the positive side. And it's like, well, actually there's probably more than 50% that were like good and I'd get away within a race. But I was drawn into this kind of 30% that was dreadful. And it was a lot about just accepting that that's not helpful, when actually that's going to do is put me in a place where I can't attack the move with the best intentions. And I think that's generally then true if you like expand that out to a race or a year. Like, it's if you obsess over the possibility, even if you've got previous history, that you're like, actually I've never managed this move well, or it's just not going to happen, obsessing about that isn't going to make it more likely that it does happen well next time. It probably makes it more likely it's going to happen badly again. And kind of drawing out of that place and trusting strengths and trusting who I am, and that at the end of the day, it's not, that doesn't define who I am. It's that I have no, that doesn't define my worth. That's not at all it. So then it's like, well, if I come into it like level-headed and confident and trusting myself and trusting that I'm going to make the decision that I think's right in the moment, then that's all I can do. And that gives you a bit more headspace and clarity in those moments.
And is that almost like the, I suppose, something that comes along with being the perfectionist? Is that you yeah. do automatically get drawn to the negative side, aren't
yeah,
you?
Definitely. And I think that it's twofold. I think it's the element of like not being able to see when things are good. And I really struggled in lead into the games. Was probably the main time where we hadn't had that much racing. I hadn't been able to see really what my potential was. Like, I'd raced 3 races and I completely bombed all 3 finals I made. Like, just I was winning qualifications, high up in semis. So like, logically it's like, well, you just didn't perform in finals, it doesn't mean that you're slow or you're rubbish. But in my brain I was like, my last races I've come like, actually this is going to sound a bit dramatic because I came like before, but like I didn't do good runs. I didn't come out of them feeling happy with how I paddled. I felt like I'd lost control and I didn't know what I was doing, and therefore going into the games I'm like, I don't know how to trust what I think I know, because it doesn't feel like it's good enough. I want to understand how to make this better. And then at the same time, everything's like, every little thing that goes wrong, it's like you end up mining into that so much about trying to understand it and get on top of it. And it's like, actually, it's completely irrelevant, especially in our sport, because the water changes so much that all you can do is focus on having good intentions to your paddling and having an understanding of, I want to get from here to there. This is the like foundation blocks of how that's most likely to happen in the quickest way. And then I have to just let myself react from there, rather than trying to like understand timing of every single stroke or like angles on the boats and those kind of things, because it's completely irrelevant realistically.
Yeah, I like that point with the, as long as you have the good intentions, then that can go a long way. And I suppose unwrapping or maybe separating that side of things with the self-worth side of things as well. So I think Lizzie Simmons, former swimmer, is someone who speaks so brilliantly on it as well, about how she like wrapped up her self-worth in the result she got in the pool. Sounds kind of similar, where you try to really work on separating those two things.
Yeah, I think that it's so common as an athlete to kind of get caught up in believing that your self-worth and who you are is an athlete. And in some ways it's because it is. Like, I spend 24/7 focused on trying to be the best athlete that I can be, and my diet is like controlled by some extent by the fact I'm an athlete. My day-to-day life, where I live, all of these elements are because I'm an athlete and I've had results that allow me to keep paddling. And therefore, to some extent, when you get in a situation where it's like, well, I don't know, I might lose funding without it. And those kind of, that weigh on every athlete that's on funding, I think, even if you're someone where it's like, well, of course you're going to make funding, what are you talking about? You're still someone that's like, well, I still need to make funding, otherwise my life's a little bit all over the place. And therefore, you end up a little bit kind of automatically winding the two together, because your life and how you live your life is based on how good you are at what you do. And it's really hard to separate the two and have the belief and understanding and trust that if those things didn't go well, and if you started to not perform as you might like, and you start to lose those things, that doesn't make you any less of a person. But it is hard when sometimes access to those things allows you to be a better person as well.
Yeah, exactly. Does it partly emphasize the importance of breaks as well, when you think of the enforced break that everyone went through when the pandemic first kicked off?
And yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I suppose I liken that to say what Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles have been talking about, and Ben Stokes at the moment as well, and taking that enforced break for yourself when you know things aren't quite happening for you, and when you know you're in a bad place. And does it feel like we're gradually starting to accept that side of things a bit more too?
Yeah, I think it's starting to become more obviously there in the public image, and people understanding that an athlete, although it's a 24/7 role, it can't always be, you can't be, no one that can do a job literally 24/7. No one does. Even when you work in offices or at high paid jobs in business, whatever, you still have those holidays. You still need that time off. And it's the exact same when you're an athlete. Because we can't switch off at the end of the day. That isn't really possible. So I think it's definitely important. I think a lot of people that had to go through lockdown, although I think most people or a high proportion of people struggled with losing access to kind of their mental security a little bit around being able to train and what they actually did with their lives and the fact that it was training and that was what they did. And kind of having that enforced time to just be able to take a break and be like, right, okay, actually, what am I doing? What do I want to be doing? Is there other things in my life that I like? And having that time to go through that process, I think was really important. And I think definitely like off the back of the games, I mean, I trained a bit, but that was kind of more for me, my like physical and mental health anyway, rather than the fact I'm an athlete, if that makes sense. But I definitely had a bit of headspace from racing and training and being on the water, just to allow myself to be like, okay, actually, what do I want to do next? Do I want to go race? Do I want more time off? And it actually gives you just that little bit of space to go through that process.
Definitely. How much do you think you've grown in that period as well? Because I think everyone's probably reflected on various things at some stage, and just it's made, for me anyway, it's made me realize certain things that I probably took for granted beforehand.
Yeah, I think I'm probably I'd probably say that in generally everyone grows over time massively, and certain situations can force that more than others. Like for me, the games massively helped me in my social anxiety and understanding that environment. And I think I grew loads over that period, even though it was like a month. I wouldn't even say it was a month. I'd say it was the week and a bit I was in the village. But over the whole of lockdown, I think people just gained an understanding a bit more about who they are and what they valued in life, and therefore kind of had more understanding of who they were. And that in itself is inherent growth.
That experience in the village, I think I saw you touch on that in the Guardian piece that you did, and just seeing people being normal. Whether is that kind of the effect it's had on you, that, you know, everyone is ultimately normal at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Or their own person.
It's so hard to really like put a pin in exactly what it was. It was something about being in an environment where there was like all the GB athletes, and those people span from Adam Peaty and Tom Daly that you know and that are in the public eye and that kind of feel quite celebrity even to an athlete. That spans all the way to like kind of me, who, although I feel a little bit like I'm not a nobody, in that situation I was very much a nobody. No one knew who I was walking through that village. And it was so weird because they were operating kind of in the same way. They were operating in kind of a normal life, just eating dinner, eating lunch, just spending time with their friends. And it kind of hit me how much it's like the media and kind of the public, but I think it will always happen, kind of build these people up to be like special and different, and that they're these amazingly different people. And actually being in that environment and realizing literally all they really cared about was everything that I cared about, which is trying to put myself in a position to be able to perform and enjoy my life and enjoy my racing. And that was pretty much all they, and realizing like similarities whilst we're all so different and all doing our own thing. And they had this whole other world that was the media personality of them. I don't know, it just kind of settled me, and it just kind of made me understand that and how different and how normal but different everyone is.
Yeah, exactly. And then off the back of obviously what you did out there and the increased coverage in yourself, how's that been to handle? Lot of people know who you are now.
Yeah, but it really doesn't feel like it. I was walking through, me and my other half went just like round the Hertford area. We're trying to find waistcoat for a suit for the wedding. And we were just like walking around, and it was literally like he just found it so funny because he was like literally was walking to the shopping center. Absolutely no one has any idea who I am, nor do they care. And like he's there, it's like you're kind of like a little bit famous, but at the same time, no one cares. It's like that's kind of how it feels. It's like there's in some environments and in some places, I am reasonably well known, but at the same time, I'm like really not. And it's kind of a bit weird, but it's nice. It's nice to be recognized, I guess, in the environments that I probably care a bit more about, like within the sporting community and kind of that kind of element, rather than necessarily a random shopping center in London. But at the same time, it's like it's kind of nice to have that anonymity still as well.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose the last thing you want when you're shopping around for a waistcoat is just getting bombarded with people saying hi.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Kind of moving on, and this is touching on more the wider sports side of things and the importance of sport, because again, we don't run a sports podcast without being fans of it and shouting about it every now and again. Can you sum up how important sport is to you? Good luck with that one.
I can actually. I mean, when I was younger, literally when I started primary school, I was the kid that would not say yes to the register. The teachers had to check I was actually there because I wouldn't say yes. I refused. And I was very, very shy. I always have been. And I think I'm inherently still quite shy. But kind of through being involved in sport, being kind of forced into, in some ways, a platform of even just within slalom, of going like the minute you're part of a sport and you're in a situation where you want to improve at something, and then you take the steps into going away with the GB teams and being in a situation where you're in this whole new environment, and even just being part of the GB squad and all those elements, and having that thing that I really wanted allowed me to move through a lot of those environments and put me in places where I kind of just was able to find out more about myself and have a bit of an understanding about why I worked the way I worked, how my brain worked in certain situations. And I think especially my coach, Craig Morris, is a massive part of that. Like I've been working with him for like, this is going to be a bit of a guess, but like 9 years. So he's been a massive part of like, I mean, he's a massive driver towards making well-rounded people, not necessarily well-rounded athletes. And therefore he does a lot of like, just trying to hold a mirror up in some respects and being like, okay, this is how what you're doing is coming across. And therefore, do you really want to be like that? Would you like to be different? It's fine with either answer, but like just a bit more understanding. I think kind of understanding the fact that because I was quiet and shy, that other people might perceive that as me being, I don't even know, just rude at times, I guess. Like I wasn't really someone that could walk in a building and just say good morning to people. I needed them to like engage with me because I didn't want to interrupt all those parts. And like, actually is like, well, that kind of just looks like you walk into a building and you're like head down, don't talk to anyone. And it's like rude. And sport has taught me a lot about being able to take the perspective away from situations and have an understanding of how other people might view things, how other people might be feeling, and how that might be affecting their interactions. And I think all of that side is just like taking that back to like my family and going and seeing my parents and kind of understanding how they work and how that's developed onto me, and having an understanding and just being able to acknowledge that, I think has really helped me kind of mold more who I want to be and has allowed me to be someone that I'm really proud of being now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I again can kind of relate to that, because likewise painfully shy as a child, and I'll be honest, part of my reasoning for getting into journalism in the first place was because it forced me to talk to people. And you grow off the back of that when you realize actually it's not as scary as you think it is.
Scary. Then,
yeah, there are some times where, you know, I worry about the reaction I might get, but by and large, again, it's like growing as a person. Did that play on your mind? Because it did for me, being the shy person that I was, because it always got brought up. And then, you know, I look at journalism and the sports side of things, it's kind of made me who I am.
Yeah, I think that there's an element of kind of people are aware that I'm quiet and shy, and like the idea of like going into the games, and specifically the way that our Olympic team ended up being, I was the medal favourite going in. I was the one that people would look at and be like, okay, I want to talk to her because she's quite possibly going to get a medal here. And I kind of knew that, but at the same time, it was a massive part that terrified me. But I think I've really learned over the whole period of the fact that, like, now obviously it gets commented back to me a little bit that I say that I'm terrified of the media and I'm really bad at interviews, and people come back at me like that. I'm like, I mean, it's still kind of true, but I've kind of learned that as long as I can talk about myself, like, in a way that sounds really, really wrong, doesn't it? That's not what I meant. But like, if I'm talking about myself and my sport, my results, then I can just talk freely about that. I can just be honest and open. And that's all really in those situations, like, require. Now, the things that are like scary are the things where it's like trying to be scripted, or I filmed Question of Sport a few weeks ago, and those kind of things, like, utterly terrifying. But I think I'm learning more and more to just kind of not be embarrassed by who I am. I wouldn't necessarily say I was specifically embarrassed before, but like, but it's more that inherent just terrified of how you might come across and how people might perceive you and what that might mean. And kind of realizing more and more that it's like, well, I put myself out in the world every day being who I am to the people that I know. Why am I suddenly then terrified of being that person to other people when realistically everyone's, and it's kind of off the back of the games, it's like everyone's different, have different personalities, operate in different ways. But they're either going to accept me for that or they're not. If they slate me about it, that's not really my problem either.
Yeah, it's accepting yourself at the end of the day, isn't it? And I always say the world would be an incredibly boring place if everybody was the same. Yeah. So, you know, find be who you are. And being terrified of interviews does not come across, by the way. That's always good. You touched on it before as well, just, you know, how passionate you are about getting people involved in sport, girls in sport as well. And it's something, again, we kind of bang on about, but just how important it is to have that, particularly for young people in their lives at the moment. And we're coming off, what, 2 days off the back of the Emma Raducanu story, which everyone's been captivated by for obvious reasons. But it sums up just by seeing something, what it can do for people, because what, 9 million people watch that. And yeah, think of all the people that can be inspired. And then it can be the same thing for a sport like yours. You know, people watching your final, think who might want to take it up off the back of that.
Yeah, it's so crazy when you actually stop and think about those kind of things. I think for me personally, it's weird because I think because I was always so involved in sport when I was a kid, I never watched it and therefore got more inspired, because it more made me competitive, actually. Probably I probably watched things and I'm like, I think I can do that. I probably really couldn't, but I mean, it was encouraging me to try and to like embrace that kind of competitive element in me. But it is weird, like, off the back of the games, I had so many messages from so many different people that seeing me kind of encouraged them to, like, they wanted their daughters to try it, their children to try it, they wanted to like understand more how they could get involved, and those kind of things are really cool. And it's amazing to be able to put that out there and encourage people. And I think, yeah, I think in pretty much everything I do, I just feel the need to just remind people of how much sport can give you and how much it can teach you and the endless benefits to being involved in sport. And I always, female sport's a massive thing, but for me, just sport, just anyone, get involved in sport, no matter your age, no matter who you are, like, do something. There's so many different sports out there. Like, the majority of people have absolutely no idea what canoe slalom is, and yet there's this massive community as well that do, and realizing the number of people around the world and therefore the number of sports you probably don't even know exist, and therefore there's always going to be a sport that you'll like and that you'll get along with and that can teach you more.
Exactly, it can give you so much. Is there anything you'd like to see to try and help grow that, particularly the women's sport side of things, and just trying to put as much of an emphasis on that as possible?
I think that it's just like, so Ailey Gibson, who's one of the slalom athletes, 3 or 4 years ago, I think now, kind of began, I guess it's a company, but it isn't really, it's called Slalom Inspires. And I initially was very involved in that, and I will give back to it whenever she wants me to. But it was purely based around the idea of getting girls involved in sport, and from grassroots all the way through to just trying to push like top end girls into understanding more and learning more. And that's become an amazing platform. And I think for me, it's just kind of utilizing what she's created there and trying to take that more places, and with the extra voice that I have on top of hers to be able to me be in there, and the push that I could have. And when I go into schools, kind of mentioning those things exist are probably the big things that I just try and like advocate as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many brilliant organizations, that being one, that are working towards that. Mintridge Foundation, I have to shout about our charity partners, but also Totally Runnable, who we have showcased before, do brilliant, brilliant things in terms of trying to get people into sport in the first place. Last point, ultimately, what's next for you? I know there's a wedding.
So really soon, next tomorrow, I fly to Bratislava for our World Championships, which is just under 2 weeks away. So that's the first little hurdle to jump through. And then I get home, I'm going to race a few of our domestic races because they were postponed for pretty much forever. So I just feel like I should encourage some participation back at domestic level in our sport. So I'm going to race some of them. And then every other waking second of the day will be wedding planning. And I did a lot of burying my head in the sand about it all before the games, with the excuse that I didn't want to deal with it pre the games. The answer was I just didn't want to deal with it, but I am having to now. So I'm getting through all that and working it all out, but it's a lot.
How long have we got roughly to go, is it?
We're getting married on the 27th of December. So not that long.
No, not that long. 5 days today. No, I mean, like I say, there's a lot to organize, but it will all come good in the end, I'm sure, and that will all be the better for it. Just make sure your outfit arrives more than 2 days before the actual wedding, which is what happened with my one for my sister's wedding, and there were some panicked faces on that Friday, I can tell you.
Yeah, that's not the one.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Mallory, for coming on to the show. Really, really enjoyed that, and I think you've raised so many important points as well, particularly about the getting into sport side of things. It just highlights how vital it is for so many people, us included, but also the mindset side of things. There's a lot people can take away from that, whether in elite sport or not. I think there's a lot of transferable lessons there that people can take for themselves. Good luck in Bratislava as well. And with all the other races, I hope you do get a bit of time to lie down at some stage and have a little bit of a break. But thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
A massive thank you to Mallory for taking the time out to speak with us, particularly as she was flying to the World Championships the day after we recorded that. They take place later this month, and we wish her all the very best. It also takes a lot for someone to talk about their mindset in such an honest way, so we really appreciate that too, and hope everyone listening has something to take away from it. That is it for this episode, everybody. Some final messages before we go. You can, of course, follow us on social media to find out what we're up to and get updates on all the episodes. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and on Instagram. All of our social handles are at SportSpielPod. I'm also changing jobs soon, so things might be a bit hectic in the near future, but once things settle back down for both myself and Will, we can get back to our usual fortnightly schedule. Thank you, as ever, listeners, for tuning in. Please spread the word as ever where you can, because it helps others find the show, and we will be back very, very soon.